Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Dick White, CEO and General Manager of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. Well, Dick, as you indicated, ridership has been going up, and I think if I got this just right, 10,000 new riders during the month of December of 2004. How do you accommodate all these new riders?
The trains get more and more crowded is essentially what happens here. It's a very, although we attempt to plan, and we use all the regional planning forecasts, so, you know, we do what the Council of Governments, which is based upon the planning forecasts of all of the local jurisdictions. So we have a good sense of what we can expect to see happen. We don't always know exactly precisely where that demand is going to be. But the problem is it takes so long to buy rail cars, and it takes so long to get the money in place, and it, generally speaking, it's at least 5 years from the beginning of having the money and beginning a procurement process until you get receipt of your new rail cars. So you have to be able to back it up that far. And what's happened of late is because of this pretty strong ridership growth, 33%, as I said, in the last 8 years, the growth has begun to outstrip the supply. The demand is outstripping the supply. And the level of crowding on the system is getting quite extraordinary. And, you know, I witness it myself every day going to work. And, you know, I take a 521 train out of Vienna in the morning, and it's still crowded. I mean, it's amazing to me how many people are on that train and get on the train as it works its way into the system. And later in the morning, it's extraordinary. Every 3 hours of our rush hour, we carry about 225,000 people who are in the system during that three and a half hour rush hour period. In the top 1 hour, 85,000 of them are in the system. So it's a lot of people, and the trains get very, very crowded. And until we can get more seats into the system, you know, the crowding makes it much less pleasant, and it certainly is less attractive, a lower incentive for people to use the system. Second important point of that is it begins to affect our reliability, you know, because people are crowding on and off the trains, sometimes inadvertently themselves because of their exuberance to try and get on a train while the train door is closing or vice versa. They do something and it actually causes the train to fail. The door unit fails because people are pressing up against it. And then we got to make it worse by taking that train out of service. So crowding has a lot of effects on us, not just an inconvenience to customers in an unpleasant set of crowding conditions, but it does affect our service reliability as well.
You talked about efforts to improve customer service, and I know Metro plans to form the Riders Advisory Committee this year. What's the purpose of this committee, and who will be on it?
Yeah, the purpose is to say that we need to, in a formal way, we need to be able to receive more public input from people in our staff's evaluation process and in the board's decision-making process. The board decided that we're really one of the probably few large transit systems in the country that doesn't have something like a formal Riders Advisory Committee. So the time has certainly come for the need to do something like that. Our board has authorized the creation of this group. They are going through a process of trying to identify exactly how the group will be formed, how large the group will be. Generally, the appointment process is likely to resemble the appointment process as to how members of our board of directors are appointed. So each of the governmental agencies themselves has their own appointment process. What we want is to have a group of people who have a commitment to the system, who are regular riders of the system, and who have a passion to help want us to make ourselves better, to bring them into the process in a stronger way, to give them more access to the development and thinking work that the staff is doing, give them an opportunity to provide input to us, and then also to provide the opportunity to influence the decisions that the board makes. Our objective is to have the group at least created by sometime this summer, and then let them begin to form and determine themselves how they go about doing their business.
Now, you're also committed to town hall meetings, and I think immediately we say town hall, everyone has a picture in their mind. So I'm curious, how does management use the information they receive at town hall meetings?
Yeah, the first town hall meeting that we did occurred last fall. Our then chairman, Bob Smith, a gubernatorial appointee from Montgomery County, felt the need to do it, and it was a very bold move and an important move because people needed to feel like they had access to the Metro management and to the Metro policy decision makers so they could throw stuff at us, let off some steam, make sure somebody was listening, and to elicit some form of response back on the kinds of things that are put in front of us. That our new board chair, Dana Kaufman, has committed to continuing this process. We're going to do three this year. The next one is going to be in April in Fairfax County, Falls Church. We hope to, we'll do one more. We'll do one in Maryland, one in the district. This is really an informal way for the public to dialogue, engage in a dialogue with the Metro Management and the Metro Board, not in the formality. Typically, our opportunities for input are normally in the formality of a public hearing process or some limited and very narrow scope of public input. So we want it to be more open, and we want it to kind of it to be more informal, and we want to take the benefit of that. And we're hoping that things like the Riders Advisory Committee, town hall meetings, and other ways of opening ourselves up and making us more transparent allows us to get the benefit of the thought process. You know, a lot of great ideas come from the people who use our services, and sometimes we haven't really thought about those ideas, and we all believe that we can benefit from having that level of participation.
I know that another major area of focus this year is improving Metro's image. I guess I'd be curious, like, what we mean by image and then how you're going to go about doing that.
Yeah, I mean, improving our image, I think, comes back to the point that last year was not a good year for us. And in the previous years that I've been here, we've sort of, you know, had ebbs and flows. But generally speaking, I think people were pretty satisfied with the services that they were getting. There may be little aberrations here and there. Last year, we had a pretty sustained, long-term set of unfortunate things that had happened, and we could sense the mounting frustration on the part of the public and our customers. And we needed to be able to restore some of that lost trust and credibility that took place last year. The proof is always in the pudding. We're only as, in our business, we use the term, we're only as good as our last rush hour. You know, people are going to, they're going to judge us by, did my bus run on time? Did my train run on time? Were the Metro employees who were transporting me courteous in what they were doing? And this focus of enhancing our image is really getting back to basics and making sure that we pull ourselves up by the bootstrap. We show process improvement. We show system reliability improvement, and we engage and bring our customers closer to us so that they can help be part of this process of improvement. In the end, people are going to, you know, this is really all about regaining some lost trust and confidence. When we say our image, I don't think that's really the right way to describe it. It's really to regain some of the lost trust and confidence that took place last year, and to have people feel like they can count on this organization once again, that we have a chance to tell them why some of these things happen, because their only take on this stuff is what they, you know, read in the news, and that's not always a complete and sometimes not even an accurate, you know, explanation of what's going on.
Washington, D.C., still federal government when you think about it. What's the relationship between the federal government and Metro?
Well, that's interesting that you would ask that question because that question is being asked in many circles right now. And it's because we've evolved from the original charter that we spoke of at the top of your show, where, you know, we were asked to go build a monumental system to serve the federal workforce in the National Capital Region. And the federal government spent a lot of money helping us to build this system. And over time, what has happened is that the ongoing support to Metro comes under just normal national surface transportation programs. Because of the level of a financial shortfall that we have, we've had study after study after study identified what we need. But generally speaking, it's about at least $300 million a year more than we get today. And that's clearly in excess of the current capabilities of our state and local funding partners to do that. The question that's now on the table is there a responsibility for the federal government to financially participate in keeping the system healthy, since the federal government had largely financed the building of the system in the first instance? And can it turn its back on the system in this time of need as we are beginning to suffer from our aging process and our growth process? And still today, half of our customers are federal employees. We do a lot of different surveys, but the fact of the matter is our bread and butter customer continues to be employees of the federal workforce. We don't even have data on the contract people who are contractors for the federal workforce, but you know, the federal workforce is such a huge presence here in this metropolitan area and is such a big part of our ridership base, and the 300 different federal agencies and offices are located within walking distance of Metro Rail Station. So there's a very strong nexus between Metro and the federal government. And even in the post 9/11 world, in the area of special security enhancements and the need to ensure continuity of operations of the federal government, Metro has an important role to play in that. So the question that's on the table is, should there be some special extra federal financial contribution that doesn't take place today?
That's an interesting point about the federal government. What does the future hold for Metro, especially as we think about a post-9/11 world and a focus on safety? We'll ask Dick White, General Manager of Metro, for his perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.